Leading presidential candidate Ferdinand Marcos Jr. vows not to let Filipinos down as he thanked his supporters for his looming electoral victory. Metro Manila and most areas in the Philippines will stay under the least stringent COVID-19 alert level until the end of the month. North Korean leader Kim Jong-un criticizes his country's health officials for their pandemic response. And the Philippines' presidential advisor for entrepreneurship wants micro-enterprises exempted from the minimum wage hike in Metro Manila and Western Visayas. Hi, I'm Carmina Constantino. Dateline Philippines begins right now. Joining us. For those of you watching us on YouTube and on Facebook, glad you could join us today. Topping the midday news, Philippine presidential race frontrunner Ferdinand Marcos Jr. assuring Filipinos, especially the 31 million who voted for him, he will not fail them. In a video released on his YouTube channel over the weekend, Marcos also thanked those who supported him throughout the campaign, his family, local leaders, and celebrities. Marcos Jr. currently has a huge lead in the poll body's unofficial tally and is likely to succeed President Rodrigo Duterte on June 30.
Hindi sapat ang mga salita upang ipaabot sa inyo kung gaano kami nagpapasalamat. Ito lang ang aming maisusukli sa inyo. Hindi namin kayo bibiguin. Patuloy pa rin po kami humihingi ng inyong pagsuporta at pakikiisa sa mga tatahakin pa nating landas bilang isang bansa. Wala nang kulay o politika mula sa puntong ito.
The winners of the senatorial race and the leading party list groups could be proclaimed this week. The Commission on Elections says it may be done as early as Wednesday. So far, the National Board of Canvassers has canvassed 159 of the total 173 COCs. Meanwhile, the Parish Pastoral Council for Responsible Voting, or PPCRV, says physical election returns and the transmitted results yielded a 98.42% match rate. Marcos Jr. and his running mate, Sara Duterte Carpio, are leading in the manual audit.
I wanted to caution on the 1.6 mismatch. It doesn't mean that it is the whole ballot that's not matching. Sometimes, you know, a volunteer is tired and may have had a typo because we matched this two times over. We look at the mismatches and in the next few days can be explained why there was a mismatch.
The PPCRV also calling for a wider bidding process for vote counting machines in the next elections. That's after technical problems marred the conduct of the May 9 vote.
The bigger question for me, and which I will encourage lobby to happen, is the opening up of the bidding process to more vendors. You know, technology moves very fast, and this is not the only type of technology that is out there.
More lawmakers backing Marcos's cousin, Leyte Representative Martin Romaldes, as the next House Speaker. The latest to express their support, the Nationalist People's Coalition. On Sunday, NPC Secretary General and former Batangas Representative Mark Mendoza, as well as other NPC members, met with Romaldes to present him the party's manifesto of endorsement. The NPC has 39 members in the House of Representatives. Several other major political parties in the House of Representatives have already backed Romualdez's speakership bid. These include PDP Laban, the Nacionalista Party, and Lakas CMD. Meanwhile, Senator Cynthia Villar and leading senatorial candidate Lauren Legarda are being considered for Senate President, according to Senate President pro tempore Ralph Recto. But a political analyst says the setup in the legislative branch may mean less checks and balances.
Kailangan bantayan. Hindi lang bantayan nila, bantayan mismo ng mga tao. Kasi pwede magkaroon ng mga sitwasyon na nagpasa ng bill, gusto nila ng mga nag-usap yan, hindi naman pala para sa mga tao. Remember, yung lesson ng EDSA itself, nagsasabi na walang indefinite power, walang ganong klase. Palagi may hangganan yan. Pag inabot mo yung hangganan, bangga sa pader.
Vice President Leni Robredo welcomed by dozens of supporters upon her arrival in New York City for her daughter's graduation. Our North America Bureau correspondent Don Tagala now joins us with that story. Don, good afternoon from Manila. Over to you.
Carmina, Filipinos from New York and New Jersey gave Philippine Vice President Leni Robredo a very warm East Coast welcome. Robredo's Korea Air flight from the Philippines via South Korea landed at the John F. Kennedy International Airport 11:10 a.m. on Sunday. Even with two luggages in tow, a long flight in a coach class with a five-hour layover in between, the Filipino vice president did not seem to mind the crowd that huddled around her to greet her. And while waiting for her Uber ride, supporters got to take some selfies with the former presidential candidate. Robredo won in the 10 states covered by the Philippine Consulate General in New York. She got 7,750 votes, or 51.35%, while former Senator Ferdinand Bongbong Marcos Jr. received 5,796, or 38.40%, of the 15 million registered voters who cast their ballots on May 9 in the Northeast Coast. Robredo is attending her daughter Jillian's graduation event at the iconic Yankee Stadium at the Bronx on May 18th. And the vice president said her priority is to have quality time with her daughters after 7 months of nonstop campaigning for the 2022 Philippine polls. The vice president has no public event scheduled during her visit. Carmina?
All right, Don, we know that she filed a leave of absence to be able to attend her daughter's graduation. Do we know how long she's going to stay there for?
We don't have that information at this time, Carmina, but we'll definitely ask her. But she said she'll probably be here in a short time.
All right. Thanks a lot. Our correspondent there in New York, Don Tagala, joining us this afternoon. Thanks, Don. Take care. Keep safe. Back here in the newsroom, leading party list group ACT-CIS still urging broadcaster Erwin Tulfo to serve as its third representative in Congress. ACT-CIS has scored three spots in the lower chamber. Edvick Yap, the brother of former ACT-CIS representative and now congressman-elect of Benguet, Eric Yap, is the party list first nominee. Tulfo is the third nominee, but he is still weighing his options.
We are still encouraging Mr. Erwin Tulfo na to join us sa lower house kasi sabi nga namin, mas marami ka matutulungan pag nasa kongreso ka.
Okay.
And pinag-iisipan po niya mabuti.
If Erwin Tulfo does grab the party list seat, that makes for a second Tulfo in Congress, as his brother Rafi is also among the leading senatorial candidates. North Korean leader Kim Jong-un slams his country's pandemic response as it battles its first COVID outbreak. State media reported Kim strongly criticized healthcare officials for what he called a botched response to epidemic prevention. He has also ordered the army to help distribute medicine in Pyongyang, where the Omicron variant was detected last week. According to state media, as of May 15th, a total of 50 people had died, and with over 1.2 million suspected cases. North Korea has one of the world's worst healthcare systems, with poorly equipped hospitals, few intensive care units, and no COVID treatment drugs or mass testing ability. It is also battling a drought that is threatening its food security. Shanghai announces a gradual reopening of businesses starting Monday amid encouraging signs on the COVID front. Infections appear to be on the decline, with 1,369 new cases reported on Sunday. That's way down from the more than 25,000 at the end of April. Shanghai's mayor says businesses will be reopened in stages. It also remains unclear when millions of people still under lockdown in China's economic capital will finally be allowed out of their homes. Metro Manila and dozens of other areas nationwide will remain under the loosest COVID alert level until the end of May. That's despite the recent detection of a new Omicron COVID-19 subvariant in the capital region and tourist spot Puerto Princesa. Under the lowest pandemic level, establishments and public transportation can operate at full capacity, while schools can implement in-person classes. Meanwhile, more than 40 areas have been placed under alert level 2. The Philippines reported 175 new cases Sunday, the 13th straight day the figure has been below 200. No new deaths were recorded by the health department. The number of active cases is at 3,008, which is the lowest since April 4 of 2020. The budget department has disbursed over 8 billion pesos for the benefits of health workers who contracted COVID-19 while on duty this year. The amount covers sickness and death benefits for public and private health care workers and non-health care workers in health facilities who contracted or may contract the coronavirus. A mild or moderately ill health care worker will receive 15,000 pesos, while those who are severely or critically sick will get 100,000 pesos. Meanwhile, the family of workers who died due to COVID-19 while in the line of duty will receive 1 million pesos. The DBM says it is up to the health department to release these funds to hospitals and treatment centers. Healthcare workers have long complained about the delay in the distribution of their benefits.
However, as of the moment, they have released the Department Memorandum 2022, which has the suspension of disbursements of COVID-19 benefits pursuant to COMELEC Resolution Number 10695. Mm-hmm. By pending decision of the COMELEC, yung disbursement of the COVID-19 benefits.
With the pandemic still not over, a health expert hopes for continuity of strict COVID management in the next administration. Infectious diseases expert Dr. Edsel Salvaña warns a sudden easing of pandemic protocols may result in a new surge. Salvaña says the mask mandate and ramped up vaccinations are among the policies that the next administration should retain.
Ang pandemya hindi pa rin tapos eh. Hindi pa rin naman din declare ng WHO na tapos na ito. And at any point, pwede mag-emerge ng mga bagong variants na deadlier or mas nakaka-evade ng ating vaccines. So mas maganda talaga na yung mga ginagawa po natin ngayon na mukhang gumagana naman talaga, keep the mask mandates and everything, may continuity kahit papano, at least until umabot sa point na sabihin na ng WHO na okay, mukhang okay na tong pandemya. Kasi kung bigla po natin talagang palitan yan, tanggalin natin yung mask mandates or hindi tayo kasing tutok sa pagbabakuna, makaumakyat na naman ulit at mas mahirapan tayo. We are in a good at a good stage right now na as much as possible you want to maintain it, and then at some point pag mukhang safe na talaga, pwede natin pag-isipan na tanggalin na yung remaining restrictions.
Well, aside from the country's pandemic response, what should the next administration prioritize in terms of the country's healthcare system? Joining us now, Dr. Ronjean Solante. He is an infectious diseases expert from the San Lazaro Hospital. Dr. Solante, good afternoon to you. Thank you for joining us today.
Hi, Carmina. Good afternoon.
All right, let's talk about the healthcare system. Dawning of a new day, do you see this coming for the healthcare system, or do you expect more of the same?
Okay, this pandemic has teach us a lot of lessons. And one of that is how fragile our healthcare system. We had mortalities in the past because of inability to be accommodated in hospitals. And a lot of them are staying at home because of that. So what is more important priority is expansion and strengthening the healthcare facility to accommodate not only for this pandemic, but also for the next pandemic, especially for emerging and re-emerging infectious diseases. No? And that's not only in terms of healthcare facility, but also the people inside the healthcare facility, the doctors, the nurses, and all the equipments. No?
Right, we're going to
second.
Talk. Yeah, go ahead.
Yes.
Go ahead.
Yeah. Second, we need to have an infrastructure that we can do research also, no? Which is very important. Surveillance, laboratory, strengthening the laboratory is another important part. And if I'm going to move forward for that, I hope we can also have a facility that we can manufacture and we can make our own vaccine.
Yeah, we're going to talk about future-proofing the healthcare system because that's all part of that later on. But first, I want to ask you, What are you waiting for in terms of a next step? What are you eagerly and closely watching here in terms of a first step that the incoming administration will take that will show you that they are going to bring about change and that change will happen in the healthcare system under this new administration, Dr. Solante?
I think the intention really of enhancing, we already have this system that has been established in the Duterte administration. It's just making it realize and maintaining it and improving it. Okay, and one of that is really putting more budgets on the Department of Health to really function and to implement such projects of this enormous continuity that we are looking at in the next administration.
I'm not sure if they have already made public their choice for the next health secretary, but we know the criticisms that the current health secretary has gotten over the pandemic response here in the country. What are you looking for in the next secretary of health?
One is the next secretary should be someone that is also engaging, not only for the government, but also for the private sector. And at the same time, he has to have the support of the medical community, which is one of the more important aspects there, because if you have that particular support, you can move people, you know, experts, different experts. You can have alignment of expert engagement with them and work as a whole, in unison. I think the present administration has done that, no? And I don't see any major fault that this administration has done. Criticism is always there, Carmina, no? Especially if you want something and the next or the current administration is not doing, there will always be criticism, no? And that's a healthy approach, because with criticism, we can build upon that and we can improve on that. Mm.
The key there is whether the person listens to the criticism or not, if it's constructive enough, that actions will take place after the criticism has been made.
Yes, correct. And it should also be built on something that if that criticism can also improve the way we do with the management of COVID, we have to explore everything. We have to get the inputs of everyone that is in that with this particular expertise. No, nobody should be left alone. Okay. Mm.
You know what happened in the 60s, Dr. Solante, the diaspora, the brain drain that happened when a lot of medical professionals sought greener pastures elsewhere. There's been talk that that might happen again. What's your feeling on the ground?
Yeah, that's why budget should be increased, and not only for healthcare infrastructure, but also infusing salaries of the doctors, increasing salaries of the nurses and all other healthcare workers, because the motive of brain drain is more or less, for me, it's more on a stable financial support for the family. And if we cannot do that, then this will really continue. And we have that ability to increase that budget for the healthcare workers. And I hope they can also prioritize that.
I mean, you've seen it. You've been here. You've been practicing for decades already. What is it really that's keeping the salary at this level? Why is it that salaries have not been adjusted, that what is due all the healthcare workers have not been given still?
Yeah, that's also one thing that I cannot understand, Carmina, no? Because every time that we have a yearly budget, then that should also be part of that budget of the Department of Health, that salary should be inputted in terms of what is the ideal and what is the most important, and how we should pay our healthcare workers also.
And what are what have been the answers the past years?
I cannot comment on that, because as I've been working in the government for almost 20 years now, we do have a lot of these talks in terms of increase in the salaries, increase in the allowance. But I think being a third world country, being a country with a limited budget also, then we just can do with what is with us.
You mentioned a while ago the importance of infrastructure, building on that. You said that there has to be surveillance, strengthen that, maybe even strengthen laboratories and maybe even build manufacturing centers of vaccines. How doable is this really for a third world country like the Philippines?
I think it's doable. If you look at the healthcare facility in infrastructure, that's already in place. The objective of the Department of Health is to put major hospitals, tertiary and secondary hospitals, to be capable of catering for this kind of infectious diseases, no, emerging and re-emerging. Second is that apart from because we are in an island format, so that's why we cannot just rely on Metro Manila as the center of referral. Every island, every provincial government should have a referral center that can cater emerging and re-emerging infectious diseases. And that is already part of the framework. Hiring infectious diseases, hiring specialists to man that and to guide that, and at the same time, strengthen the laboratory of each of these facilities so that we can get actual testing and laboratory and detect what are these infections. It's just a matter really of executing this, implementing this, and putting budgets on this part.
Can it be done within 6 years?
Yes, I think so. It can be done because some of these centers, Carmina, are already in existence. Just that we have to allocate and reallocate a building within that particular center. Like, for example, if I'm going to give an example, in the Visayas, you have Vicente Soto Medical Center. We will identify that and allocate a building that will also cater for emerging and re-emerging infectious diseases. In Mindanao, we have Davao City. So more or less, we have to identify each of the provinces that will have a center that will cater such a type of infection so that in the event, if there will be a pandemic, like a highly transmissible infectious disease, then these facilities can really cater and manage them even without the problem of transferring or referral to Manila to get the diagnosis, to get the test.
Mm. One other thing that the pandemic has exposed really is in terms of logistics. Dr. Salanti, you've seen that. There were vaccines available, but the logistics really, that was problematic in the delivery of these vaccines to certain areas. How do you bring the development here in the National Capital Region in terms of the healthcare system to far-flung areas? That seems to be a challenge for many administrations now.
Yes, and that's why, Carmina, when we devolve the function of the hospitals, not only here in Manila, but also put important referral centers in far-flung areas, in major parts of different provinces, then that can cut the and shorten the logistic limitations that we encountered now, especially with delivery of vaccines or delivery of good logistics in terms of clinical management and diagnostics. So that in itself, we will not be dependent anymore of NCR. If we have those centers in the Visayas, in Mindanao, then we can somehow manage on that part because it is already distributed in strategic areas outside of Manila.
And the next administration should be able to do that right away, because what will happen, Dr. Salanti, if they miss this opportunity to expand and strengthen the healthcare system in the Philippines?
We don't want what happened to us during the first quarter or the first 6 months of the pandemic, where our healthcare facilities were really overwhelmed. We were not able to identify, and we were able to identify, but our hospitals were just so overwhelmed because we are not prepared for that. And I think another part here, Carmina, is also collaborate with the private sector, especially the private sector part of the hospitals, where they can also be a part of this what we call network of hospitals that will be part of this emerging and re-emerging, addressing emerging and re-emerging infectious diseases.
Mm-hmm. I want to focus now on manpower. We kind of touched on it a while ago, Dr. Salanti, but as we know, even during the pandemic, many healthcare workers have chosen to leave the country for reasons known to them. These are very personal reasons as well, and part of that really is salary as well. But on the other hand, you also have future healthcare workers whose education has been really impacted on by the pandemic. How do you then bridge the gap that was brought about by the pandemic to their education so that they could catch up, they could be, you know, not just warm bodies, but really healthcare workers who are able to address the needs of the population, Dr. Solante?
Right. That's a very important question. No? And that's why I think it will start with modifying the curriculum in the medical setting, in the nursing colleges, that we had to also include preparedness of pandemic, educating this younger population of future doctors and future nurses, the importance of a healthcare worker in a pandemic, in the control of infectious diseases, so that they will be able to understand the situation and why this is needed and why they are needed also once we need them to be also part of our healthcare facilities.
And let's talk about investments. Again, you kind of touched on that a while ago, the need for the private sector as well to help in this. But if there were maybe three things that are really needed by the healthcare system in terms of investments to sort of bring us further into the future, what would those three things be, Dr. Solante?
Okay, we need to be collaborative. Okay, this is very important for us. No, we need to grow. We need research for us to really also get a foresight of what's happening, and at the same time, based on clinical evidence, based on facts and evidence. And I think three is really the importance of government support. Government support is crucial when we move forward with controlling such type of an enormous healthcare problem, where we can always rely on government support.
And finally, let's talk about future-proofing the healthcare system. And Dr. Solante, if this administration is serious in future-proofing our healthcare system, what do they need to do right now or as soon as they assume office?
Okay. Look at the landscape of our healthcare system, okay? If the landscape is adequate enough to accommodate another next pandemic, if there are things that we need to improve, if there are people we need to engage with. So it's more of like looking at how can we improve our healthcare facility? How can we improve our healthcare delivery? Are there things that are not yet in place that when we place them, it can matter a lot and it can improve our delivery.
Okay, we're going to have to leave it at that. Dr. Ronchin Solante, they're an infectious diseases expert there at the San Lazaro Hospital. Thanks for always keeping an open line for us. Thanks again. Take care and keep safe.
Thanks, Camina.
All right, from there, we're going to take a break. Up ahead, separate shooting incidents in the U.S. leave several dead. Details of those stories and more when Dateline Philippines returns. Stay with us here on ANC. We are back. So Dateline Philippines here on ANC. Here's another look at our headlines this noon. Leading presidential candidate Ferdinand Marcos Jr. vows not to let Filipinos down as he thanked his supporters for his looming electoral victory. Metro Manila and most areas in the Philippines will stay under the least stringent COVID-19 alert level until the end of the month. North Korean leader Kim Jong-un criticizes his country's health officials for their pandemic response. And the Philippines' presidential advisor for entrepreneurship wants micro-enterprises exempted from the minimum wage hike in Metro Manila and Western Visayas. Back with more news. NATO's Secretary General Jens Stoltenberg says Russia's war in Ukraine is not going as Moscow had planned, and its capture of the Donbas region has stalled. Stoltenberg also notes Ukraine could actually win the war. Britain's Ministry of Defense has estimated Russia has lost about a third of its ground combat force since the war began, as it faced logistical issues and stiff Ukrainian resistance. Russia has withdrawn from areas around the capital, Kyiv, after failing to capture it. It has since refocused its efforts in the east. On top of that, Stoltenberg says Russia will also likely face an expanded NATO, with Sweden and Finland expected to join the alliance.
But Ukraine stands. NATO is stronger than ever.
Europe and North America are solidly united. Ukraine can win this war.
U.S. Senate Republican leader Mitch McConnell expects the Senate to vote on Monday on the $40 billion proposed aid for Ukraine. McConnell expects a wide margin to approve the measure. President Biden had asked Congress for an aid package worth $33 billion. The House boosted the sum to roughly $40 billion. Meanwhile, McConnell also voiced strong support for Sweden and Finland's plans to seek membership with NATO, saying they will be important additions to the military alliance. Earlier, Swedish Prime Minister Magdalena Andersson announced her party's support for the country's NATO bid. Being a party to NATO would end Sweden's neutral foreign policy stance it had made during the Cold War.
Today, the Social Democratic Party has concluded that Sweden should join NATO. Our 200-year-long standing policy of military non-alignment has served Sweden well. But the issue at hand is whether military non-alignment will keep serving as well.
Over in the Middle East, Lebanon holds its first parliamentary election since the country's economic collapse and deadly explosion at the Beirut's port in 2020. But voting was marred by power cuts and a low turnout of only 41%, down from 50% in the 2018 polls. The election is seen as a test of whether the heavily armed Iran-backed Hezbollah and its allies can keep their assembly majority amid soaring poverty and anger at parties in power. Many of the voters say they hope to deal a blow to ruling politicians they blame for the economic crisis, even if the odds of major change appear slim. The World Bank has said the economic meltdown was orchestrated by the ruling class. It sank the currency by more than 90%, plunging three-quarters of the population into poverty. Sri Lanka's economic crisis will get worse before it gets better. That warning coming from Sri Lanka's new Prime Minister Ranil Wickremesinghe. In an interview with BBC, the Prime Minister appealed to the world for more financial help. But he also vowed to make sure families will get three meals a day. Wickremesinghe was appointed in an attempt to defuse protests amid fuel shortages and soaring food prices. The people are calling for the resignation of President Gotabaya Rajapaksa amid the country's worst economic crisis since gaining independence from Britain in 1948. In the U.S., residents of Buffalo in New York gather for vigils and church services to mourn the 10 people shot and killed in an apparent hate crime on Saturday. The shooter, identified as 18-year-old Peyton Gendron, was arrested at the scene, a grocery store, in a black neighborhood. He had driven from his hometown more than 320 kilometers away. Gendron was wearing body armor, carried an assault rifle, and live-streamed the attack. Police say of the 10 dead and 3 wounded, 11 were African Americans. U.S. President Joe Biden offered a potent condemnation of racist extremism during a memorial on Sunday.
The lone gunman, armed with weapons of war and hate-filled soul, shot and killed 10 innocent people in cold blood at a grocery store on Saturday afternoon. Jill and I, like all of you, pray for the victims and their families and a devastated community. The Justice Department has stated publicly that it is investigating the matter as a hate crime, racially motivated act of white supremacy and violent extremism. As they do, we must all work together to address the hate that remains a stain on the soul of America. The hearts are heavy once again, but a resolve must never ever waver.
Gendron has been arraigned on first-degree murder and held without bail. He has pleaded not guilty. From New York, we head over to California, where another shooting incident has happened. At least one person is dead and four others are critically injured after a shooting at a church in Laguna Woods. The victims are all elderly of Asian descent. Local police say the suspect was detained at the scene after a group of people at the church were able to hogtie his legs with an extension cord and confiscate at least two handguns from him. The suspect is an Asian man in his 60s. They have yet to determine a motive. Turning now to business, Presidential Advisor for Entrepreneurship Joey Concepcion says microenterprises should be exempt from the hike in the minimum wage of workers in Metro Manila and Western Visayas. Workers in Metro Manila have been granted a 33 peso hike in their minimum wage, while the Regional Wage Board in Western Visayas has approved an increase of 55 pesos to 110 pesos for workers in non-agriculture, industrial, and commercial establishments. The Labor Department says this will restore the purchasing power of minimum wage earners amid the rising prices of basic goods and petroleum products. But Concepcion says this can be detrimental to micro-entrepreneurs.
If the micro-entrepreneurs who are hiring at least more than 10 people, then they are not under this exemption. It's just below 10 people. These are the most vulnerable group that we have. And if they're, most micro entrepreneurs are people who can't get a job, so they start their own small little business, no? And some do well, but this pandemic has affected most of them. They definitely will not survive if these wages will be imposed on them.
For the Trade Union Congress of the Philippines, the latest wage hikes are very inadequate.
Pwede naman sila mag-apply na exemptions. Marami sa mga miyembro ng PCCI at ng ECOP ang nag-apply ng exemption dahil hindi nila kinaya yung mga previous wage increases. And they were granted. Not all businesses were affected by the pandemic. In fact, some of the businesses even improved their profit margin during that period. So far, the business sector and the employer sectors have not presented us any data the basis of their claim that many businesses are bankrupt, many businesses are having a hard time recovering.
Motorists can breathe a sigh of relief this week. Beginning tomorrow, Tuesday, diesel prices will be slashed by 3 pesos and 10 centavos per liter. Gasoline prices will be 40 centavos cheaper per liter, while kerosene will see a 2 peso and 10 centavo price drop. This latest rollback, however, is not enough to offset the previous price hike. Oil prices have seen drastic increases in recent weeks, mainly due to the conflict between Russia and Ukraine, which have major roles in the oil trade. We're going to take another break. Still ahead, a pair of Game 7 blowouts in the NBA playoffs, the latest in sports when Dateline Philippines returns. Stay with ANC. We are back with an update on the weather. Pag-asa forecaster Robert Badrina joins us on the line with that. Robert, good afternoon. Go ahead.
Good afternoon, Carmina, and good afternoon to all our televiewers. So this is the latest on our weather. So currently, no, we are not monitoring any low-pressure area within the Philippine Air Responsibility, meaning there's a very low possibility of a tropical formation at least for this week, tropical cyclone formation at least for this week. And intertropical convergence on RTCZ is currently affecting the areas in Mindanao. It will bring cloudy skies with scattered rain showers and thunderstorms, particularly in major areas in Mindanao as well as eastern and central Visayas, including Palawan. Meanwhile, in the northern part of our country, frontal system is currently affecting the extreme northern Luzon, and it will bring cloudy skies with scattered rain showers and thunderstorms over Ilocos Norte, Batanes, and Babuen Group of Islands. Here in Metro Manila and the rest of the country, we will experience a partly cloudy to cloudy skies with some isolated rain showers and thunderstorms, particularly in the afternoon and in the evening. So that's the latest our weather from Pag-asa Weather Forecasting Center. Robert Badrina reporting. Thank you.
Hi, Robert. Just stay on the line for a quick question. Yes. The heat and humidity, though, it's been really hot and humid the past days. Have we seen the peak, or are we seeing hotter and more humid days ahead?
Yeah. Actually, based on our monitoring, we're starting to observe the changes in the wind pattern, particularly before we used to have the easterlies or the wind coming from the eastern side of the country, particularly in the Pacific Ocean. But now, we're starting to observe a wind coming from the south, and we were expecting that we'll start to transition or to move towards the coming rainy season. So I would say it's a generally good news for most of our people, because we're expected slowly We're starting to have a lower temperature, particularly most parts of the country, basically because we're going to have more rain showers, particularly in the afternoon and evening, since we're now transitioning to the rainy season.
All right. Thanks a lot for that info. Robert Badrina there joining us on the line. To you and the rest of the team there, thanks and take care. Now, on to some sports action. The Philippines has so far secured 20 gold medals in the ongoing Southeast Asian Games. On Sunday, gymnast Carlos Yulo, wushu artist Agatha Wong, and Marian Mangrobang all grabbed top prize in their respective sports Sunday. Yulo won the floor exercise, Wong in the Tai Chi Chuan event, and Mangrobang in the duathlon. The Philippines currently ranks third in the overall medal tally behind host Vietnam and Thailand. In the NBA, the Boston Celtics have eliminated the defending champions, Milwaukee Bucks. The Celtics demolished the Bucks in Game 7 of their second round showdown, 109-81, behind a historic three-point spree and role player Grant Williams. The defensive specialist scored a career-high 27 points, built around seven three-pointers. As a team, Boston finished with a playoff franchise record 22 conversions from beyond the arc. The Celtics now move on to the Eastern Conference Finals to face the top-seeded Miami Heat. Just like the Bucks, last year's NBA finalists, the Phoenix Suns, have gone fishing. The Suns were humiliated on their home floor, losing Game 7 to Luka Doncic, and the Dallas Mavericks 123-90. Doncic lit up the Suns for 35 points, while Spencer Dinwiddie added 30 off the Dallas bench. Dallas led by 30 at halftime and coasted to victory. They advanced to the Western Conference Finals to battle Steph Curry and the Golden State Warriors. In entertainment, Marvel and Disney's Doctor Strange in the Multiverse of Madness saw a sharp drop-off this weekend from its blockbuster opening, but industry watcher Exhibitor Relations says the film still reported $61 million in estimated ticket sales to top North America's box office. The superhero sequel had opened last weekend to a year's best $187 million. For more on this story, head on over to news.abs-cbn.com. A remake of a Stephen King movie and a film about a woman's right to choose. Manny the Movie Guy has what's new in theaters.
Daddy.
What's going on, sweetie?
Something feels weird.
Something feels weird in this reboot based on one of Stephen King's earlier works, Firestarter.
Paper shifts back up.
The original 1984 film starred Drew Barrymore as Charlie, a young girl with pyrokinesis. She can create and control fire with her mind.
I'm a monster!
The new version has Ryan Kira Armstrong as our Firestarter, and this time, it's the emotional bond between her and her father, played by Zac Efron, that's explored as they run away from a government agency intent on capturing her.
First of her kind.
As much as this new version ignited my interest, Universal Pictures did not make this film available for critics in time for this deadline. So, enter this film at your own risk.
J'ai tellement peur de pas réussir aux examens.
A film I'm recommending this week is Happening, the Golden Lion winner of last year's Venice Film Festival. This thought-provoking French drama based on L'Evénement by Annie Ernaux tells the story of Anne, a young and gifted student in 1963 France. Her dilemma? She's pregnant. Should she terminate her pregnancy at a time when it was illegal to do so?
I had an abortion myself.
But take note, this passion project of director Audrey Diwan is not preachy. We are invited to witness a story of a girl, wonderfully played by Ana Maria Bartolomé, as she faces a life-changing decision. This one is timely with what's going on in the Supreme Court, but don't watch this for political reasons either. Let yourself understand what's happening. And for that, Happening gets 3.5 out of 4 award-winning kisses. I'm Manny the Movie Guy for ABS-CBN News.
And that'll do it for today. Thanks for joining us. I'm Carmina Constantino. If you want to revisit today's episode, you can play back this newscast on ANC's YouTube channel and on ANC 24/7 on Facebook. Keep safe. Keep it here on ANC.